Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analyticshour and their website analyticshour.io. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 62. Hey Tim, I've got a question for you. Do you vape?
I do not.
Well, then that's fine. If you are a smoker, though, you should check it out. But seriously,
maybe I'll start smoking. Then yeah, no. Ask me again in a couple weeks.
Yeah. No, but there is a question that I do want your help to answer, and that is, where exactly does the job of the analyst start and end? This came to us via Justin Goodman, also known as Electric Mice on the Measure Slack. And he proposed that. So thank you, Justin. And what is it like? Do we just chuck insights over the walls of the business and then go back to our, you know, shack on the data lake? And or, you know, are we chasing waterfall development methodologies and trying to make them more agile? This is the show where we're going to talk about that. Tim, you have been called
metaphors and butchered cliches.
Yeah, now that's where we're. This is where it's got to be. Tim Wilson, you are the co-host, and notable industry people have called you the quintessential analyst.
And did they ever put that in writing? And who were these people?
I think it was just me in episode 60. But
okay,
I think people agree. So I am, of course, Michael Helbing, the non-quintessential analyst. So we kind of have both of those bases covered. So let's talk about the beginning and the end. So, Tim, where do we start? Where do we start as analysts?
So I think we certainly start way before the data. I mean, I think that's – I've certainly seen cases where analysts get – on the one hand, say, we need to be involved really, really early. And then they get pulled in really, really early and they come out of the meeting saying, that was a waste of my time. We're nowhere near needing any data yet. Mm-hmm. So I think it is almost, cliche is probably not the right word, but, you know, analysts, we like to pull our hair and gnash our teeth about not being involved in the planning stages of things. I actually think we should be involved there. It's just we haven't done a very good job of defining of what our role is when we are involved there, because mm-hmm. a lot of the discussions are much more strategy and vision and ideation discussions, and we can't just say, yeah, but you know, where's the data? I want to do something with the data, but I think we should start there.
Well, and it always feels, you know, from my non-quintessential point of view, it feels unfulfilling to get asked for data as opposed to asked to help solve a business problem.
Yeah. And I guess the challenge is when somebody comes and even if they frame a business problem, a lot of times it feels like that's, if the first you hear is, hey, a bunch of us were sitting around chatting and we've been pulling our hair out on this for the last 3 months. And hey, somebody finally said, why don't you go ask Tim? And they arrive like to right. It can feel like you're like thrown into the deep end. You haven't been on that journey with the business to say, what are we really trying to do? Right. We're trying to ask good probing questions, but they're at their wit's end by the time they got you involved.
So even so, at a strategic level, that goes all the way up to corporate goal setting and planning. So like, what is the big plan for the year? And then as the analyst, you cascade down to, okay, what am I doing in my plan that supports that bigger objective? And I wonder, like, is that a common thing for companies or is that something that's not that common?
I feel like there is just a woeful lack of clear capture and articulation of what that overall plan is, how we're thinking about our customers. Just in the last couple of weeks, I was having a conversation, and this, I guess this is a question of like, is this the analyst role? Because I was talking to an analyst who's a client at a very large company. And as we were talking, I was like, you know, it almost seems like fundamentally you guys are thinking about your customers as in two major groups. And one of them has sort of this path that you want them to follow, and the others have this other. And we were just kind of talking, trying to work it out between the two of us. And it wasn't anything she had seen. It was just kind of both of us picking up from the questions we were hearing and the way that people were trying to look at the data.
Yeah.
And I proposed at the time, I said, well, maybe that's what we should do, is we should literally, one, map that out and go and check and see if it's right, which I think is... I've never seen an analyst get shot down if they said, hey, I was just drawing on my whiteboard trying to understand how we see the business fitting together. There's nothing about data in that. So I don't know how much this is what I like to do. I like to have the one clear, understandable diagram that says, this seems to be the way we're thinking about this. Is that because I want to do that? Is that because I think the analyst should do it? I've certainly tried to coach analysts to do that and watched many of them either resist or just struggle because they don't seem to see the value of it. But I think there's enormous value. Somebody's got to do that. And to me, I see a lot of companies, you know, maybe there's a high level strategy. By the time it gets down to a certain maybe marketing area, that whole cascading down and view of the big picture has gotten kind of lost. And now we're just executing campaigns or executing projects. So I don't know. I feel like that is valuable. When we had, Christopher Berry on, that was a little bit of what we were talking about with systems thinking, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, sure. And I think that only helps analysis when there's context, both in terms of problem pursuit or like what should I be analyzing, and in terms of insight delivery and framing.
Yeah. And I think even in the third, which it's related to both of those, is that fostering the dialogue with the people who are the actual stakeholders to say, I think this is what's going on. And if they say, well, not quite, it's really this other thing. Or once you have them saying, hey, we're on the same page and we've got that framing, we're aligned on the framing. Now I've got a lot more confidence when I go back and pull data that I come back and deliver it. And it's within that framing. But I feel like how much is that? This is where we play the gray hair card. How much of that is a experience, more senior, more background with marketing, able to play that role? Is that too much to ask of, I'll say, a typical analyst? I think it's clearly not too much to ask of somebody who is a senior seasoned analyst, but at what point in a evolution, I feel like after a year, you should be trying to do it, because even if you're dead wrong with the framing, you're one, learning yourself, because when you're playing it back, the person you're working with is saying, no, that's not right at all. And that means you're rapidly accelerating your ability to do that, and you're not hurting yourself.
And you're finding out through that process if there is someone in the organization willing to partner with you, mentor you in thinking about the business in the right context.
Yeah.
Which is really helpful in understanding what your future at that company could be like.
Well, and I guess I'd even say if you don't do it, if you don't map it out, you're still going to be making decisions when you're doing the analysis that are going to be making those assumptions. Like, well, I'm now marching down the path of saying, if you aren't making that attempt consciously and deliberately, then you are very, very potentially going to be doing analysis that's going to miss the mark, because you're doing the analysis with the wrong framing, because you're making assumptions, even if you haven't consciously thought about that framing. Whew, boy, feeling pretty abstract right now.
But I think it's good to kind of build the structure, and then we can try to move towards more practical application and usage. But I think we're both in agreement on this one. And that means as an analyst getting started, the beginning is as early into the process as you can possibly get. I mean, even maybe as early as ideation in terms of any kind of initiative or...
Which seems like it's a smoother ask or a smoother thing to do in-house because you don't necessarily have the time pressure. Oh, this is another body that we're having to bill for.
Right.
Now, you still have to have management support and whatever that you're an organizational support to get to be in the room. But actually, I think Justin, because he's been in a couple of agencies, and I think he was initially even asking from the agency side. And I definitely do remember that being a tougher lift, both through the account team who's trying to manage the, profitability of the client, saying we can't show up with an army of people. We have to have our creative person. We have to have our account manager. We have to have our strategy person. We can't show up with five people for every meeting. And so they will push back. And the client may push back as well, saying, why is the analyst in the room? And maybe that's just, well, that's why there are some aspects of being an analyst in an agency that really, really suck. But do you have thoughts on the agency side from your days back doing that?
Well, yeah. And I think for the agency side, you get brought in at a specific juncture. So unless you're round in the corner into year two after kind of the first year working with a specific client, which, is something that, hopefully is happening, but then you can kind of look to participate earlier in the process. I think, you just go in and grab up any information you can get to make yourself understand the context. And a lot of times I try to be really upfront with clients about, hey, in the first analyses, it may feel, somewhat contextually challenged because there's still going to be some growing in terms of what we can bring to the table. Now, some stuff is just really easy to analyze. And so you get the Jim Kane's favorite quote, the low hanging fruit.
Well, wait a minute, Brady, are you speaking? I was thinking more from being on the creative agency side. Well, I guess.
Even if you're on that side of it, I mean, so maybe your agency is engaged to, create a brand new experience or redo the website that the client's using, whatever. I guess in those cases, yeah, I'm always trying to push to at least include somebody from analytics all the way back in the design phase. Because if you have to hear what the motivation, objectives, plan, goals for what this is all doing from the client. You've got to hear that stuff because that's how you design the measurement and know what to go look at from a metrics perspective anyway.
Yeah, and I think I'd agree. I mean, I got to the point where I was often in the pitch, and that was actually useful because the pitch, you'd have conversations and you'd figure out what the client was kind of lighting up on. But I was always pushing to say, we need to be involved early. We need to be scoping in time to be participating. We need to be doing a measurement plan. I definitely remember coming out and sometimes doing measurement plans as an analyst at a creative agency that was actually putting in those diagrams of saying, this measurement plan is based on our understanding that this is the place that your business is. And then because we've come in with a strategy that we're proposing, I've sometimes felt like I was trying to be let me actually translate from this 74 slide strategy deck that is death by PowerPoint to try to, no one ever really framed it. What are we trying to do here? Now, I felt like I was being very not what was expected. And it really varied. Even that, there were the account teams that were like, this is awesome. You're really helping. And there were the account teams saying, get the fuck back in your little cubicle, shut up and give me the Google Analytics tags.
Yeah. Well, right. And I think it's that just goes to show you kind of the, there's that spectrum everywhere of, you know, kind of stakeholders, people you work with and things like that. And you,
well, except it's two, he's got two layers. Cause that you could say 50% were in the, what the hell are you doing? The same thing happens on clients. 50% of them are going to be, what the hell are you doing? And in order for it to work on an agency side, both of those have to say, yes, we actually want you here. So,
right.
You know, it's a,
so that only
25%.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
I was about to come out with that number.
That's good.
I second guessed myself because I'm not good at math. No, I'm just kidding.
I wrote a little R script that told me that was
there. There you go. Perfect. So yeah, and on the agency side, I think it's tougher. You mentioned the constraint of kind of how you allocate time and those kinds of things. And so that's part of that. Obviously, when you're sort of doing a full service thing, you can kind of have somebody who's sort of 100% committed to that. And so that's nice when you have a structure like that where someone can really focus. And then I think you can still build that same level of insight and quality over time. But that's, you know, probably not 100% of the kinds of engagements that people do.
But I think that's the other thing when you were bringing up that the longer you work, the more you're understanding the business. Now having had cases where I've had, you know, multiple clients for multiple years, it does seem like there's sort of a, you can easily slip into the comfortable, I know what they ask for, I know how to give them the stuff that meets what they're asking for, and kind of forgetting that, hey, I should be getting more familiar with the business. I should be more able to kind of elevate my thinking a little bit farther and have a better understanding of, you know, the business to actually do that framing. Cause it can feel a little awkward to say, well, I've been working with them for 2 years. Why am I framing this stuff for them now? Mm-hmm. Or why am I asking these questions? Because I'm now suddenly confused about, you know, wait a minute, are we doubling down on our emerging products, or are we really going after our enterprise clients? Like which one of these is it? But I've also seen that, hey, you know, asking the big question, as long as it's not like, I'm not going to do anything until we've answered this big impossible question. You know, you can kind of always do that, whether you've been doing something for 6 months or for 5 years. So, okay. Yeah. So we're agreed, as early as possible, put on your strategic thinking hat, ask smart questions. And those questions need to be questions you genuinely want the answer to, because you can sort of see or understand how that will inform what types of analysis you're doing and how you're, you know, framing what you find. Right.
Yeah. And the key to staying invited to those early sessions is be careful what you say.
Well, but don't just be a bump on a log, yeah, right?
It's fair. You got to contribute, but you got to, it's a delicate thing. Cause it's sort of like when you don't have anything to, you don't have data to bring, quote unquote, yet, but you certainly have insights and things you've observed. And if you've been in the industry for a while or done things, you know, some things that will or won't work or are good or bad usability or things like that. So you've got something to say, but that's sort of one where you just got to know yourself a little bit, I think.
Well, I think it's often fine to not say anything, but listen like crazy and then follow up. You know, like, you're listening to this, nobody knows this, what the answer is here, to go off and say, I spent half an hour looking at, I realized this other campaign that was maybe from 3 years ago did have some similarities in this one area. So, hey, I went back and looked at this, and then whether it's the next meeting of that group or whether it's just a quick note blasted out to them, say, hey, there was a lot of discussion around this and it occurred to me I could look, you know, here or here, which is the sort of thing that you watch like on the Measure Slack or in other maybe more private forums where the question will get thrown out. Hey, has anybody ever seen or done X or Y, you know, tapping into your network and saying, we have this, you know, this weird thing we're doing with Pinterest, or has anybody done this or seen this, or did they learn anything? And so I think that the, you didn't leave the meeting with any action items. Nobody looked at you and said, we're counting on you to go deliver something. But if you actually follow up after and say, nobody asked for this, but I realized there was something that I could help move the ball forward in the planning stage. That rockets you up the credibility. They're like, oh yeah, you know, Tim was didn't say a word. And I walked out of the meeting saying, why was Tim there again? And then, the next day Tim, you know, shot a note and it was super helpful. So
see, that's quintessential right there. Actually, what it is, it's proactive. And I think that's just a good look on anybody. So no, I love that tip. That's a really good tip, is because, yeah, maybe you don't have anything you're able to say right then, but if people see you having put thought and action behind that and contributing like that, that's pretty, that's a good idea. So that's interesting. Okay, so this one, frankly, is super boring. We both agree. So let's get to maybe the more interesting or the more nuanced, which is, where do we stop? Where do we stop? And honestly, this one has probably a matrixed answer, right? Because, you know, some analysts, you know, they get done pulling some data out of Google Analytics and then they jump into AdWords to modify the bids because they're wearing lots of hats. And so for them, the job of an analyst is also the job of the paid search marketer and the email marketer too, maybe, or some combination of things that they're doing as an analyst. So that's, and as you grow in the organization, I think maybe there's more and more specialization and more kind of focused stuff. But, you know, so I don't know, do we want to pick a spot? So maybe at the enterprise level, where should the analyst job end?
Well, to me, my perspective on this is simpler, but also seems like a lot of people push back. Like I had a client once that literally would go in and make a custom report. When asked a question, would make a custom report or multiple custom reports, export them, throw them in Excel, and ship them back to the requester and say, and then they would check it off as done. To me, that was like, that wasn't even debatable what a piss poor job that was.
That is not doing analysis.
So even if he went through and said, I have delivered, I have done the analysis and answered your question, to me, that is still stopping short of what the analyst should be doing. And that it's so easy to say, I've sent this. Like, how many people get 50, 100 emails a day? And even if they ask for it, just the asynchronous nature of analysis. I had a business problem or a business question I asked the analyst, and then I had to wait to get that back from them. And I may look at it, but I'm not in the same spot I was when I asked the question. So somebody, to not be pissing away resources, somebody needs to kind of own the entire life cycle of an analysis, which goes from capturing the right question, which was kind of what we were talking about earlier, all the way through, did we make a decision? Did we take an action? And did that actually drive impact? And none of that, it's not like I can sit down and say, from 8 to 9 tomorrow morning, we are going to make a decision, take the action, and measure the impact. Like, it's just inherently complicated that you'll make the decision and that it, you know, that point plus, you know, 5 hours or 3 months before you take an action. And then at that time, plus a week or 3 months, you might be able to quantify it. And I just don't think it is insanely naive if an analyst thinks that the business stakeholder is going to own each of those spots, even if they should, but we're not living in, you know, theoretical land. So I guess clearly I have some strong opinions on this one.
I don't disagree with you, Tim. I think that makes a lot of sense to me. I think I probably take a nuanced view as an analysis kind of reaches its point of passing into the business, sort of proving it and evaluating the impact and those kinds of things kind of become sort of tasks after the action, as opposed to necessarily like attached to the original analysis. But I do like the idea of there being sort of an ownership of the overarching sort of process. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that has to be from within the analyst organization in some context, because I think the ownership has to live there. And the only thing I would say is, in terms of where you sort of pass that off, it's sort of at the point that you take your data, you synthesize it into a recommendation, hopefully with some kind of a forecast of what expected results will happen because of that in some kind of business terminology, then that's kind of where I see the you've done it. Now, the next thing, and this is sort of where you transition from being an analyst in a certain sense into being an organization builder, or perish the thought, a growth hacker.
Oh my God.
I did it. I was in a meeting a few days ago, and I managed to say web trends about 10 times in one meeting. It was great.
That's outstanding.
Yeah. So anyways, no, but you see what I mean? Like, it's, I don't see that as an analyst skill set as much as it kind of has to be, because almost nobody else is doing it. But is it really the analyst's job?
I think there can be organizations that have built out their processes such that it may bubble up on the analyst's radar to say, oh, now it's time to go measure the impact, because we are clicking is such a high functioning organization that is so driven around a Lean or Six Sigma or whatever it is,
right,
process that we're, or even agile in a fully functional way. I just, that seems like it is such a rare thing to see, that if you get out of the, you know, I can piss and moan all day about it's not happening, but hell, that's something I can do. And maybe it does come down to kind of a racy mentality that, okay, maybe I shouldn't necessarily be accountable for measuring the impact. That should be the product manager or the marketer or whoever. But the fact is, if nobody's really holding them accountable to it, then do we want to just let the company throw money away that we're not doing it? Or do we say, you know what, I as an analyst am going to take that on? So I think it's fair.
And I don't disagree with that either, because I'm a big time sort of take ownership and take initiative. It's sort of like you see a piece of trash on the ground, just pick it up. Like, you just don't walk by it because you can't. That being said, I have also, that has hurt me in my career as well, especially on the agency side early on, because I was doing so many things to help train people, help with business development, all these things. And then you get to a time and they're like, Michael, you haven't spent enough time billing clients. And you're like, but I did all these other, and they're like, we don't care. So there's this balancing act. And obviously, if you're on the industry side, then hopefully there's a little more understanding of that time gets spent in kind of all these different ways. However, that's an interesting problem. And I've seen it go out past the analysis to the action, where literally the analyst takes on the job of managing the action across the organization. And I'm not advocating for that, but it's sort of like, well, how badly do you want to see the change happen? Well, enough to go and wrangle an IT group and align everybody and go run the project yourself.
I guess if we agree that it is a major value drain, if there is analysis being, even by the time the analysis is done, if it's a good analysis, there's been a lot of investment of multiple people's time getting to the point where the analysis even started, much less finished.
Right.
And if it shouldn't be the analyst's job to actually drive, that should be a project manager or the product manager or the marketer to actually drive beyond that. And if that job's not happening, there is the risk that if the analyst says, by golly, I'm going to step in and I'm going to try to make sure I drive that, well, is that actually just perpetuating kind of a shitty business process? and reducing the bandwidth to actually do analysis.
Well, that's the trade-off, right? The opportunity cost is that the analyst isn't doing their primary function of doing more analysis at that point, right? Because they're over here trying to get tags on a website or something like that. The only thing I'll say, though, is up to a point, if you want to see it go anywhere, you might have to put on a hard hat and go do that. Because I just fundamentally believe something about analytics generally, which is as organizations see the value of what happens when they do take action, they'll make the adjustments to start making those things. And that's what I've observed over time. And so in a certain sense, it's kind of like there's some of this that's maybe just priming the pump. It's like, nobody's taking action. Well, how far could I drive an action? Okay. And if I show positive results and actions over, of course, a period of time, then I can sit down with my boss and my boss's boss and other groups of people and say, hey, listen, I want to talk to you about a prioritization thing because here's how I'm spending my time. I think you'll agree that we found some really good recommendations. And if I'm over here kind of making those come to life, I'm not back here finding new ones. What can we do to continue to drive this success forward? And if you've had success you can point to, somebody's going to cough up another resource at that point.
Yeah. And if you, I mean, a lot of this does go to the life cycle of an analysis will be one of the little phrases I'll use, where if you say it starts with a problem that leads to a hypothesis all the way through it's put in place and measured impact. If you are tracking all of those, well, if you're just trying to track that entire life cycle, that inherently is going to draw you into asking questions of, is this going to get implemented? When is this going to get implemented? Do you want me to manage getting it implemented? But what that also gives you is it gives you the data to say, one, how long does this stuff take? Two, who are the partners that I'm working with where we are actually successful? What are the ones where I'm clearly just spinning my wheels? So I think that winds up getting all the way back to the drum I beat all the time about actually owning the tracking and the rigor behind the entire kind of life cycle of analysis projects.
Yeah. Well, and for the times when you can't take immediate action, storing that somewhere and keeping it current and in the view of the business so that it can be prioritized and acted on. And I remember, you know, in my days as a practitioner analyst, you know, we managed to get ourselves all the way up into sort of the steering committee prioritization meetings with our big list of here's things we think we can accomplish on the website, you know, because we built up that backlog. I might have said I disagree, but I don't disagree with the idea of keeping track of what is getting done and then going back and doing the measurement to fix that. So you've mentioned that a couple of times. And I think what I'm trying to say is it's sort of there's distinct parts or phases. And I view that as a phase or as part of the analytics job, but not necessarily one that has to happen like in sequence. Like it's sort of like if you're documenting where and when things are happening, then you have a running list of what you need to go back and quantify. And yeah. Also, if that's happening and people are going to come ask you too. So you better keep track because someone's going to come ask for quantification and like, hey, you said we're going to make $5 million with this. What actually happened? And, you know, then you come back and be like, well, actually it was $7.5 million because I'm terrible at forecasting things. No, I'm
so
just kidding.
Quick little tangent. Okay. What's your take on, because when it comes to that, it's managing a process.
Yes.
And it is managing a process that can take a lot of time and a lot of rigor and not necessarily the sort of person who is necessarily perfectly geared towards analytics. So where Correct. Do you fall on the, if you've reached some level of scale, be that as an agency or a large organization, to have a full-time or maybe half-time role that is just someone who's trying to manage the intake prioritization and tracking. So ideally not just a not just a PM who knows what a work breakdown structure is, but somebody who's saying we are actually trying to shepherd this, but probably not actually doing any analysis ourselves.
I think that's the third person you put in that team, department, whatever you want to call it. The first
third. Okay.
The first two, because we talked about this on a prior episode. Like, if you could build a analytics department with three people, who would you hire? And so I always chose a technical analyst, somebody who can, you know, manage the implementation and the technical aspects, a business analyst who can crunch the numbers and work with the technical analyst, and a successful manager that has already demonstrated success moving projects through the organization. That would be okay. My ideal team.
So that's like two, because on the one hand, that person would be the knowledgeable business knowledge, organizational knowledge, the ability to get things done, but also potentially the, and you know what? I'm going to roll up my sleeves and my tactical thing is I'm going to have my spreadsheet or my Jira system or Basecamp or whatever where I'm tracking.
They're going to own that process. And obviously the analysts can help with that, right? They can update this, whatever it is that's going to be the system. But the you know, if you're drawing the RACI matrix, this is the person at the end of the day who is accountable for it, right?
Yeah. So, well, ideally they're with the team that's that size, they aren't doing it just for the sake of ticking off boxes, which can happen if you say, oh, we got a project manager, we put into this role. They just come up with something abstract. If it's tied to the person who's actually trying to drive organizational change, they're like, look, we're capturing the information that we need when we need it, and then we're using that to actually feed to drive the organization. So
exactly. Yeah. And the thing is ideally if they're having success doing that, then they probably understand how to get good results from their people, right? In terms of, you know, doing the blocking and tackling out in front to allow the analyst to actually get work done, you know, and kind of picking up sort of those side random requests and giving them the priority that they need. And again, if they have credibility, because that's the thing right there is analysts have to go in and build credibility. And if you start with a PM or a project manager or a leader who isn't an analyst but already has some of that credibility in the organization, you're so far down the road already, you're going to have a ton of success. And your analysts,
maybe. I don't know. I've seen the PMs who are like well-regarded PMs, yet they are total box checkers, and so they come in, they tell you what data to deliver.
That's fair because I forgot about the extremely, like, way more dysfunctional than I'm picturing in my head organizations. Where it's like, oh yeah, they're the best PM ever, and it's like, best PM. It's like, oh no.
I had a case where I'm like, every time this one PM was on it, I'm like, are you kidding me? And it was funny because apparently that PM thought I was great. And I'm like, that PM, I want to put my head through. Even now I'm no longer working on that client, and I still get, like, through back channels, they're like, oh, guess who's back? And guess what that PM just asked for? So.
No, but see, that's because, Tim, you are the quintessential analyst.
Yeah.
PMs love you. No, so this is, I think, really sad for our listeners because we couldn't come up with a single point in which we violently disagree. And, you know, I think, you know, people.
I think there are plenty of analysts that actually will violently disagree with, because we basically said it starts super, super early and we went as broad as possible. And the analysts I've run into, there will some that will violently disagree.
There are some, like, for lack of a better word, there's some places that are like kind of like union shops, right? Where it's like, oh, I can't pick that up. That's for local 102 to do.
Yeah.
And again, nothing against unions. It just means, like, the way that happens in reality can sometimes look dumb on the ground. Like, it's just sort of like, what? That doesn't make sense to me. It's like, well, there's arcane rules behind it all. And you have your box and you stay inside it. And then at really large scale, like when you're talking huge teams and in massive organizations, some of that kind of makes sense because no one person can kind of manage all of that. So I can get that to a point. But like if you're sitting in sort of a, you know, a less than $5 billion business, then I think this is decent advice.
Yeah.
All right. So Tim, you're a pretty smart guy. And on the show, we do this thing called The Last Call, where we go around and we just talk about stuff we found recently that is interesting to us. What have you got?
So I'm going to do it. I'm going to have to do a twofer because I cannot decide. So I'll have one's going to be very short. It's just really, really cool. And this is over a month old at this point. But I don't know if you caught this, but on April 1st, for about 72 hours, Reddit did a thing on Place that was a pixel collaboration. Basically, any user on Reddit could go in and change one pixel on this massive canvas to any color, but they could only change one pixel every like 5 to 10 minutes.
And yeah, I did see that.
It's just freaking cool. And some of the analysis was done of it. So it's just it's a visualization. It's not a data visualization, but even some of the analyses that were done of what happened and the different types of strategies that were taken in. So that was just too cool not to mention. So we'll link to that. My real last call is probably going to ramble a little bit, but so I was in Russia last month for the Go Analytics conference and spent a lot of time hanging out with the Yandex people, specifically the Yandex Metrica. And where I was kind of struck was, so Yandex, which if anybody goes to analytics hour.io, they'll see we're running Yandex Metrica because I was working on a little demo. And Yandex Metrica, turns out it's kind of cool. Like it's a basic web analytics thing. Plus it has heat mapping, you know, a la, you know, Clicktail. It's got session replay. And I was like, how are they, what is Yandex? And so Yandex as a company is literally like the Google of Russia, and that they have higher market share in some aspects of the exact same things Google does. You know, I don't know exactly where they fall, but when they have display networks, they have paid search, they have the go-to, you know, map destination finder for the Moscow metro system. They have taxis. There's Yandex taxis. So they just like have all this stuff going on, but they have their analytics platform is just like Google Analytics started out. It's free because it drives the other aspects of their business. They don't have sampling. Maybe I think their UI is a little farther, maybe not quite as advanced as GA, but it's a pretty cool tool. And it just got me sort of looking at, in the US, we've got, you know, basically Google and Adobe. And in Russia, they have Google and Yandex. Adobe has just a tiny, tiny footprint. And they can kind of duke it out in those kind of local markets, but there is innovation that isn't happening because they're kind of in the markets that they're not trying to sell an analytics product. They're trying to sell all these other services, and analytics is kind of backing it up. So I don't know. It was kind of a rambling to me. I was there for almost a week, so I was kind of pondering it a lot and literally see Yandex everywhere. And it's just like seeing Google. Everybody knows Google, but you know, does your second cousin know Google Analytics? And it's exactly the same with Yandex and Yandex Metrica. So it was like being on another planet that had an insane number of parallels to sort of my home planet of the US, but it was a completely different company. It was just really kind of a mind bending thing. And if you've got a site and you, that's not like a corporate, you know, if you've got one that you can throw another tag on, we implemented it in 5 minutes through GTM on our site. And, it's kind of fun to poke around in a different tool. It's fun playing with other little tools, especially ones that don't require a whole lot of time.
No, well, I think that's pretty awesome. And as someone who's had the opportunity to go to Russia once before, I'm super glad that you got that experience because it was
an experience.
It's a unique, and it's valuable for us Americans to get over there. All right. Yeah. So my last call.
What's yours? Yeah. What you got?
So a couple months back at Adobe Summit, you meet all kinds of people during that time. But one person I met was this woman from Singapore who runs a small analytics consultancy called Attribute Data. And she and one of her team were there at Joanna Teo. And she was showing me this little proof of concept that they built leveraging Adobe and IBM Watson's API. And it's actually really cool. So what they did is they basically they ingest your Twitter feed, they run it through Watson's API from IBM and ascertain your personality type, feed that back out to you, and then deliver via Target a personalized message based on your personality characteristics.
Like ENTJ?
No, it's not Myers-Briggs, okay? It's just a proof of concept, but it was just really neat, and it was just really fun to meet kind of innovative and creative people from around the world. And so it was just, anyways, it just something that stuck with me from my Adobe Summit experience a couple months ago, and it's pretty cool little proof of concept. If you go to attributedata.com, you'll see it on their homepage, or at least as of this recording, you would. I imagine they might leave it there for a little bit longer.
Where were they? Where are they out of? You said
they're based in Singapore. So they're So that's also pretty cool. So if you're looking for some good analytics talent in Singapore, seems like they're a pretty sharp crew. So anyway,
nice.
Just awesome. Throwing that out there. I thought it was pretty neat. Really fun to meet those folks. All right. Well, listen, you've been hanging with us so far, listening to us just destroy your concept of where an analyst job starts and ends. And it's time for you to get back into this conversation via the Measure Slack or our Facebook page or Twitter. We would love to hear from you. So don't hesitate. Stop the car, pull over, pull out the phone, and just start tweeting. We'd love to hear from you. I think this is something that if we kind of continue to push this conversation and grow our understanding of what we should all be doing as analysts, I think it'll make us all better off. And I think that's the show. I think that's all we've got. Tim, you got anything else? Or are we just...
No. As always, you know, give us a review. Give us a rating on iTunes.
Ratings and reviews on iTunes. It's... we're... Damn it. We're begging now. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway.
It helps others find the show. That's what they always say on the other.
Is that what it is? Okay.
I don't know. I don't know if it does or not. I think that's just an urban myth at this point.
Well, we're both good and bad at the self-promotion. And I guess that's okay. So anyway, Tim it's Wilson, endearing. As the quintessential co-host. I think you would join me in telling our audience to keep analyzing.
For listening, and don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Visit us on the web at analyticshour.io, facebook.com/analyticshour, or at analyticshour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
Cash me outside, how about that?
That would be a pop culture reference.
That is correct.
Oh my god.
That's how America works. And here's the dog.
Pause and then say, I don't disagree.
I don't disagree. Oh. Okay, sorry.
I don't know if you caught this. The really dog.
We can cut that part out.
Rock flag and roll clarity.